This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We've got another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime for you this week, beginning with the Epic Casebook. We'll hear The Threads of Death, their story from June 13, 1968. After that, it's Unit 99 and Liquor Store Holdup. That episode aired October 18, 1957.
Cousin Sophie Duffel.
The makers of Epic Pure Sunflower Oil, Purine and Pret Cooking Fat, Yum Yum Peanut Butter, Maple Margarine, and Niblet's Cheese Twists present The Epic Casebook. In which Inspector Carr investigates.
Good evening. It will not have escaped the notice of regular listeners to my casebook of crime that there are clearly defined organizations to deal with matters of British security. Now, when I say security, I don't just mean it in its generally accepted sense, that is, safeguarding the military and political secrets necessary to a country's defense. I mean security in all its ramifications. Keeping a country and its people secure from the effects of lawlessness, industrial unrest, economic upheaval. From time to time, my stories have featured the ramifications of MI5, or the Special Branch. Yet despite opinion to the contrary, any death, where murder is suspected, is handled by the Criminal Investigation Department of a police force, and not by what are commonly known as the Cloak and Dagger Boys, even if the persons concerned are known to be actively engaged in political or diplomatic negotiations of the most confidential nature. Why all this? Because the story I'm going to tell you tonight concerns the death of someone who, in his lifetime, became one of Britain's most distinguished Foreign Office officials. His name was Sir Roland Makepeace. I've called my story The Threads of Death. The unusual aspect of Sir Roland Makepeace's death can be gauged from the way operations brought matters to my notice. Carr?
Operations here, Inspector.
No, who's been murdered this time?
Well, sir, we don't know that he has been murdered.
He? Who in the name of goodness is he? And if a murder hasn't been reported, why are you telephoning the duty officer of the murder squad?
Well, sir, it was first reported to the Foreign Office.
Foreign Office?
Yes, sir. We've just had a Mr. William Banbury from the Foreign Office on the line. He's coming down to see you, sir.
Mr. Banbury, is he?
That's right, sir. Seems as though there's some doubt as to whether the man found dead was murdered or committed suicide. You may have heard of him, sir. His name is Sir Roland Makepeace.
Makepeace? Oh, yes, yes. I've seen his name in the newspapers. How was he killed, you know?
No, sir. Wouldn't give any more information.
Well, if he wouldn't, he wouldn't. All we can do is await his arrival. Mr. William Banbury could not have been bettered as the epitome of the British Foreign Office official. Tall, with a slightly stooping academic air and a deceptively slow manner of speech, he painted a word picture that was succinctly clear in a matter of minutes.
A servant found Sir Roland hanging from a rope less than 30 minutes ago. Now, Inspector, there's nothing to indicate that he was murdered. Without going into the whys and wherefores, I must tell you that Sir Roland was head of our Eastern European Division and was on the point of preparing a memorandum that would profoundly affect the member states of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Mr. Banbury, you wouldn't have got in touch with Scotland Yard unless you yourself were pretty certain that this gentleman was murdered. Have you any other reasons for suspecting foul play other than some foreign power wanting to stop him issuing his memorandum?
Well, it's not quite as simple as that.
Oh?
I myself think he was murdered. Assuming it was suicide, we still need your help. I might as well tell you that the servant who found the body is a member of our security organization.
Well, how can we be of help if we do decide the gentleman committed suicide?
Well, it's now 9:30. It's going to be absolutely impossible to keep Sir Roland's death a secret. By midday, the papers are going to carry the story. If it's suicide, certain overseas newspapers will play it up tremendously. They'll say that Sir Roland took his life because he didn't want to be a party to wicked intrigue against the Balkan states. You realize that this memorandum he was preparing was due to be presented to NATO in 10 days' time. It must be murder.
Because Sir Roland Makepeace was not the sort of man to take his own life?
Well, frankly, at the moment, I'm not concerned with the dead man's reputation. Inspector Carr, we want it to be murder. If we can demonstrate that Sir Roland Makepeace forfeited his life, died because of his efforts to reach an understanding with Yugoslavia, we can go to the conference table with the knowledge and show that one of Britain's top foreign office officials was murdered by the enemies of Yugoslavia as well as Britain. On the other hand, if by then the inquest brings in a verdict of suicide, the ground will be cut from under our feet.
Can't you prevent the inquest?
Impossible to do. I wish we could. But the law says that an inquest must be held within a reasonable space of time after death. If we break the law, the boys on the other side will play that up too. Get the message?
Loud and clear. Except for one thing. Supposing I investigate his death, and my conclusions are that this gentleman took his own life. What happens then?
We at the Foreign Office will have to bow to the inevitable. I'm hoping and praying it is murder.
Well, we'd better get cracking. I assume you've brought me all the relevant facts concerning Sir Roland's age, background.
Of course. I've got his personal security file here.
Good.
You'll find ample reasons for rejecting the theory of suicide. He was a man in late middle age, a charming wife, 3 married children, 5 grandchildren. He was completely integrated in every way.
No financial worries? Gambling? Anything of that sort?
None.
Okay. What's the address?
106 Ensley Gardens, Knightsbridge.
Who's in the house now? In other words, who knows of Sir Roland's death?
No one except Lady Makepeace and the household staff.
Local police haven't been brought in?
No, you see, 2 of his staff are highly trained security men with an elementary knowledge of first aid. Sir Roland was dead when they cut him down.
Who cut him down?
The butler.
All right, Mr. Banbury, leave it to me. This is the very first time in my checkered police career that I'm going to the scene of a death hoping that the person lost his life because of a deliberate act of murder. Have you sent anyone from security?
Yes, there'll be a chap outside, Miller. He'll meet you and take you in.
I don't want to arouse more curiosity than necessary, but I have to arrange for fingerprint experts, photographers. Of course, the body will be examined by our own police surgeon.
Of course.
And one other thing. Mustn't take this amiss. While I'm in charge of the investigation, I am in charge. In other words, I don't want any of your plainclothes men coming up to me and flaunting MI5 cards. Security or no security, the scene of his death will be my zone of investigation, and I will give the instructions, right?
Perfectly all right.
Just one last thing. Oh, where was the body found?
In his study.
Excuse me a moment.
Yes, Inspector?
My compliments to the senior police surgeon. Tell Dr. McPherson that an extremely urgent case has cropped up. Would he meet me at transport in 5 minutes?
Very good, sir.
Well, I'll get back to Whitehall. Terrible, terrible business. If you need me urgently, Sir Roland's valet will get me on the special line.
Special line?
From their residence to security.
Oh, right. Thank you very much. If I need you, I'll call on you. Together with my friend, the senior police surgeon, I set out for Ensley Gardens, giving the worthy doctor all the information vouchsafed by Mr. Banbury. We were met by Banbury's MI5 man, Miller.
The study's on the right, gentlemen. You're Inspector Carr, I take it.
Yes, that's right. This is Dr. McPherson, senior police surgeon.
How do you do? Lady Makepeace is resting. Oh. Poor woman, she's quite distraught. I gave instructions that no one was to touch anything. That's the study.
Now then, let's check our watches. What time did you make it, Mac?
10 minutes past 10.
You, Miller?
Ditto.
Do you want me to get the estimated time now?
Yes, Mac, and try not to touch the clothes. The dead man was lying on a sofa that ran along one side of the study wall. In the center of the high ceiling was a chandelier, baroque in its splendor. From it dangled a thin nylon rope. About 2 feet away was an overturned occasional table.
Well, he seems to have taken the precaution of removing his jacket and tie. I'm afraid I'll have to loosen his collar.
Well, there's no reason why you shouldn't. It was the rope, all right, wasn't it? That's a pretty ugly wheel. Not the sort of thing one wants to look at 10:30 in the morning.
It looks suicide, all right. But why remove the jacket and tie?
And why not the shoes? I should have thought that would be suicide, particularly the meticulous sort of individual Sir Roland appears to have been, would have removed his shoes before stepping onto what looks like a highly expensive and beautifully polished table. Look, Mac. Look at that dried mud in his shoes. It was raining cats and dogs all night.
I don't know. A man so worked up as to be on the point of hanging himself wouldn't worry about spoiling a table.
That's not the point. Once a person plans his suicide, which he did if we accept suicide, and goes to the extent of removing his jacket and his tie, it would be almost a reflex action to remove his shoes. Now, it's pretty obvious that when he was cut down, he was placed on that sofa.
Oh, I can tell you about that.
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. I heard voices and I came down. They should have told me you were here. It's all like something out of an American film, isn't it? I still find it difficult to accept. Are you some of my husband's colleagues?
I wish I could have introduced myself under better circumstances, Lady Makepeace. My name is Carr, Inspector Carr, New Scotland Yard. This is Dr. Macpherson, our senior police sir.
How do you do?
How do you do, Lady Makepeace?
I suppose you've come for information. Is it for the inquest? Will they say that he took his life while of unsound mind? I don't believe it. Roland was tired, overworked, worried about the NATO conference. Oh, sorry.
Is there somewhere we could talk, Lady Makepeace?
Yes, of course. Come through here.
I'll leave it to you, Mac. When you're finished, you can take the car and the driver. I'll ring when I'm ready to leave.
All right, you are.
Perhaps we could talk in the music room.
You say your husband was overworked, tired. Was he depressed at all?
Sometimes. His was a thankless job, Inspector. Mm-hmm. So selfish. I keep thinking what the publicity is going to do to my children and my grandchildren at school. Please sit down.
Thank you. Well, of course, we shall see to it that there is a minimum of publicity.
The thought of an inquest terrifies me. People will be talking about my husband forgive me.
Publicity is inevitable, Lady Makepeace, whenever an inquest is held, but there may not be an inquest.
But
Lady Makepeace, it seems to me that there is a strong possibility that your husband did not take his own life.
I don't understand.
I can't justify it at the moment, but I think your husband was murdered.
Oh, how horrible. Then they followed him. I must have known something like this would happen.
They?
Yes, strange people.
You realize, Lady Makepeace, that a man of such importance would have security people following him in order to protect him?
Protect him? How protected was he? I knew it. I couldn't accept the thought that Roland killed himself. Even if he was on the verge of a nervous breakdown, he'd never do a thing like that.
Do you think he was?
I don't know. He used to come home, say he had an uneasy feeling that people were following him, people who didn't belong to security.
I see. I'm sorry to have to ask you this, Lady Makepeace. When did you see your husband alive last?
Yesterday, about midday. Oh, dear, I've got a feeling I'm deceiving you, Inspector, that I'm not telling you the truth.
I gazed at the grey-haired lady sitting upright in her chair and wondered whether she was holding something back, something vital to my investigation. Why did you use the phrase, not telling me the truth, Lady Makepeace?
Because I would rather my husband was the victim of a murderer than the humiliating thought that Roland was willing to leave us all just like that. We who loved and respected him so much. It must have been murder. Yet it looked like suicide. Oh, I'll never forget the sight as long as I live. All those shouts from the butler.
Heavens! Lady Makepeace! Lady Makepeace! My lady, come quickly!
What happened? What's the matter, Hobson?
It's Sir Roland. He's hanged himself.
I rushed into the study. Hobson cut the rope. Then I went to my room. I didn't want to lose control in front of the servants.
May I suggest, Lady Makepeace, that you go and rest. And thank you for spending so much time with me. I'll go and catch Dr. McPherson. He's probably still in the study.
I'm about through. What a way to end one's life. And they say he was a brilliant diplomat. Did you learn anything?
He was murdered, all right, Mac. There's absolutely no reason for this man to have taken his own life.
Who knows what prompts a man to commit suicide? For all we know, he might have been selling secrets to a foreign power and was afraid of discovery. Estimated time of death about 2:30.
You've been reading too many lurid espionage stories, Mac. Oh, well, I'll make my report to that foreign office, Johnny. I am now convinced, Mr. Banbury, that Sir Roland Makepeace was murdered.
Good heavens. Terrible thing to say, but I hope you're right. An awful thought to contemplate, but better than the knowledge that he committed suicide. The audacity of it. To kill one of our senior diplomats in his own home. I'll notify security and let them take over.
Why, if you remember, I took on the investigation under the strict condition
but
that
now
I...
it's different. Our special branch...
The circumstances are not different at all. You've placed me in charge, and I'm far from finished.
But in...
I never give up halfway through an investigation, Mr. Banbury, and I don't propose to start doing so now.
But what about the inquest?
I'll give certain evidence and convince the coroner and jury that Sir Roland was murdered by some person or persons unknown. That is, if I don't have my suspects under lock and key before then.
You say suspects. That suggests more than one involved.
I think so. Now, please don't ask any more questions, Mr. Banbury. At this stage, I'll not be able to provide you with satisfactory answers. But I will in due course. Never fear. I displayed a hearty optimism I didn't exactly feel, because I didn't want Mr. Banbury to use his secret powers to deprive me of the results of the investigation so far. We removed the body to the police mortuary, and there I voiced my suspicions to Dr. McPherson. I'm reasonably confident that the suicide was staged. Now, were you able to tell whether Sir Roland was alive when he was strung up, Mac?
Oh, he was alive, all right. Otherwise, the blood wouldn't have seeped through. Had he been dead, the heart would have stopped pumping.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at those spots of blood on the man's neck.
Yes, I see. But he wasn't conscious, even if he was alive.
Still think the suicide was a fake, do you?
More than ever. Now, be a good chap. Have another look at his scalp.
Right.
Must have been stunned or chloroformed or something.
Just a minute. Stunned.
Stunned?
Aye. Run your fingers over the back of his head.
Oh, yeah?
You feel that bump? I should have noticed that before.
Oh, nonsense. Not that thick mat of grey hair. Recent bump?
There's no question about it. If that was an old... No, he could have hurt his head days ago. The bump would have subsided. He was hit less than 24 hours ago. I'd stake my reputation on it.
Don't. Save it for the inquest. You're a great guy, Mac. I think I'll go and have a word with that butler. Do you live on the premises, Mr. Hobson?
Yes, I do, sir. I and my wife, who acts as cook general, occupy the two attic rooms.
And did you hear anything at all during the night?
Well, I awoke at about one or so. I thought I heard a taxi.
Why taxi? Why not an ordinary car?
Because I heard a voice say, thank you, and then the taxi drove off.
Tell me about the Makepeaces. Were they happily married?
Devoted to each other, sir.
All right, Mr. Hobson. I want you to tell me exactly what happened. You shouted, Lady Makepeace, come quickly. Sir Roland has hanged himself.
Yes, that's right, sir.
Then what happened?
I rushed to get a knife and cut the poor gentleman down.
Did you knock over the occasional table?
No.
Now, according to your statement, apart from putting Sir Roland on the sofa, you didn't touch anything.
No, I did not.
Who notified the police?
The chauffeur. Patterson did.
All right. Thank you. Oh, well, is there anything else you can tell me?
Well, what is there to say?
Well, nothing at the moment. Thank you. Taxi, you say?
You want a general call for a taxi driver who dropped a fare at 106 Endsley Gardens. Very good, Inspector.
Yes, I want you to get through to the Foreign Office, too. Find out what time Sir Roland Makepeace left Whitehall and what transport arrangements were made by security.
Right, sir.
Quickly as you can. Yes?
Can I come in?
Oh, just the man I want. Oh, please do come in, Mr. Banbury. I was about to telephone you.
Any news?
Plenty. Sit down.
Thank you.
It's now a foregone conclusion that Sir Roland did not commit suicide. In my opinion, the murderers had nothing to do with the machinations of some foreign power.
But that's incredible. I mean, who...
Never mind that now. According to Lady Makepeace, her husband was working under such pressure that he had a room at the Foreign Office where he occasionally stayed the night.
Yes?
Excuse me. Yes?
I telephoned Whitehall, sir. Security says Sir Roland telephoned his wife at about 9:15... telling her that he would be staying the night at the Foreign Office in order to complete the memorandum on the Balkan conference.
Mm-hmm.
However, he called for a Foreign Office car at 2:15.
I see. Thank you. Did you know that Sir Roland was due to spend last night at the Foreign Office?
I saw him there at 10:00. He told me that if he didn't complete his memorandum, he'd work through the night. But he obviously didn't do so.
It's less than 10 minutes from Whitehall to Endsley Gardens. That means that the driver dropped him at about 2:25. Unless... Well, let's see what happens about the taxi. So, this is your statement, Mr. Bainsman. Oh, would you care to read it through?
All right, sir. In response to a telephone call received at a taxi rank at the corner of Brook and Sackville Streets, I proceeded to 8 Inkerdogan Square. I rang the bell... A gentleman answered immediately and asked me to take him to 106 Endsley Gardens. We arrived at the destination at approximately 1:20. He paid me off, and I drove back to the rank, and that's all I know.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baines. Sergeant, we're calling on 18 Cadogan Square. In the meantime, get through to control, find out if the occupant of the flat is home. You, Mr. Baines, will come with me for purposes of identification. I'll see that you're suitably recompensed for a lot of time.
What on earth's all this about? I was just on the point of going to bed.
All right, Mr. Baines, was this your fare?
That seems, sir.
Will somebody please tell
Inspector
me...
Inspector Carr, New Scotland Yard. It's my warrant card. You took a taxi at 1:20 this morning. You took it to 106 Endsley Gardens.
Well, so what? Is that a crime?
That's what I'm trying to find out, Mr. Duke. Oh, your name is Duke, isn't it?
So it says. Yes, my name is Duke. I don't know what all this is about.
Who did you go to see at 106 Endsley Gardens?
Well,
I think you'd better come with me. There are one or two questions we want to ask you. Oh, on second thoughts, we won't go back to the yard. We'll call on Lady Makepeace. Sorry to have had to telephone you at this atrocious hour. You didn't waken Lady Makepeace, I trust?
You said it was unnecessary, sir. Mr. Duke.
Hi, Hobson.
won't you come through, gentlemen?
Thank you. Let's go into the study, shall we? Did you let Mr. Duke in last night, Hobson?
Last night? No, sir. I didn't see Mr. Duke last night. Through here, gentlemen.
When did you see Mr. Duke last?
I've only seen this gentleman once or twice. Why, sir?
Got your own key, Mr. Duke?
This is nonsense. Key?
Who let you in?
Well...
Oh, come on, Mr. Duke. You said you called round last night. Mr. Hobson, the butler, was asleep. Who let you in?
Rosalind. Lady Makepeace.
My compliments to Lady Makepeace. Would you come down, please?
Sir.
Do as I say, as a good chap.
Very good, sir.
Duke. Your face is familiar to me, Mr. Duke.
I suppose I'm permitted to ask what this is all about.
Don't tell me you haven't read in the newspapers that Sir Roland has been found dead.
I heard it on the radio.
Then why do you want to know what it's all about? What do you think I'm doing here? Well, I'll be... Flash, Duke. I haven't seen you since you used to work the boats. I remembered him all right. Flash Duke. Started off in life as a professional dancing partner for the transatlantic shipping line. Took to card sharping, gambling, confidence trickery. Oh, it's all beginning to fall into a pattern. Particularly when Lady Rosalind arrived.
I resent being dragged from my bed, Inspector.
Mr. Duke tells me that he paid you a call at 1:20 last night.
Rosalind, the taxi driver,
I might have known. You contemptible little gutter snipe. The first sign of danger and you confess everything.
Oh, shut up, you idiot.
But the damage was done. I arrested them both. Poor Sir Roland Makepeace. While he was busy serving his country, this charming grey-haired grandmother was being escorted by Flash Duke. Whether he hit Sir Roland with a blackjack on impulse, as he said in the trial, and then strung the husband up in order to fake a suicide, or whether the whole thing was premeditated from the beginning in order that Lady Makepeace should inherit Sir Roland's not inconsiderable wealth, was not clearly established. Both paid the penalty for the crime. But what was the clue that convinced me it was murder and not suicide? Well, listeners, what was the clue? If you remember, Dr. McPherson and I looked at the shoes. Look at the mud on the shoes. Rain cats and dogs all night. Yet the overturned occasional table was as clean as a new pin. Got it now? Of course, what really happened was that the poor husband arrived back, Duke coshed him, tied one end of the rope to the bracket of the chandelier and the other round the neck of the unfortunate Foreign Office official who was strangled to death. And the moral of the story, ladies, if you decide to string your husband along, that's your business. When you string him up, that's ours. Good night.
The Epic Casebook was produced by Michael Silver for the makers of Epic Pure Sunflower Oil, Maple Margarine, Yum Yum Peanut Butter, and Niblet Cheese Twists, with Hugh Ross as Inspector Carr. Listen again next Thursday night at 9:30 to another exciting story from our Epic Casebook.
KMA 907, Sacramento Police, to Unit 99. Are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Guthrie, 909. In service and on the air. This is Sergeant Bruce Guthrie with Unit 99 at Headquarters, Police Department, City of Sacramento, California. My detail is to ride in Unit 99, a tape recorder-equipped radio car, and to respond whenever the dispatcher transmits a signal to one of our other units on duty somewhere in the city. At the scene, we make the recordings for this program. Now, to tell you more about Unit 99, here's our chief, James V. Hicks, Sacramento Police.
Unit 99 is a regulation radio patrol unit of the Sacramento Police Department, cruising the streets with a tape recorder. Sergeant Guthrie is on duty and works for your protection, as every police officer does. He can and does make arrests. His orders are to respond to the radio call. You go with him, and what you hear is real. Police, criminals, victims, and witnesses are all real. And whether an arrest is made or the subject released, what happens is real. Make no mistake about that. Now to Unit 99 and Sergeant Bruce Guthrie on duty.
Unit 8. The 211, Stockton and Fruit Ridge, the M&L Liquor Store. Check 8, KMA 907.
Just had a 211 out in District 8. The liquor store. It's quite a ways out, but we better cover it.
We had a 211 at the M&L Liquor Store, Stockton and Footbridge. One suspect. WMA, 32, subject wearing a light jacket, seen going west on Fruit Ridge, ground foot.
Well, Sir Walter and Bryant are talking to the proprietor. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Sergeant.
What have you got so far?
Well, we've
got an upset operator here. That's what you got.
That's understandable. Would you mind telling us what happened, sir?
Well, frankly, I don't know, other than that the man came in here and he asked me if I was about ready to close. And I says, no, it's not for about an hour. And he said, that's good enough with me. Just hand over your paper money.
Did he have a gun?
He certainly did. One with a barrel about 2 inches long. I don't know what the caliber that it was. I says, don't you want any cash? And he says, no, just give me the paper money. He says, fold it up and put it in the bag.
You tell whether it was a revolver or not?
Well, not knowing guns too well, you could probably tell me better than I could. It had a snub nose on it about this long.
Probably was an automatic, then, well, as
he laid it right over his hand on it, and he laid it down and pointed it toward me, and that's when I was to it. I gave him the money, and I left a $5 bill in the till, which is still here.
Been like
he didn't even question me. He just walked through and says, is there a back entrance here? And I says, well, certainly there's a back entrance. So he walked up. You see the door that's open right there. So he couldn't get out that way, so he took the other way. Of course, as he was going out, he jerked the darn phone off the hook.
I see. He left the phone laying right there.
He just pulled us off and he put it up to his ear, and then he grabbed this darn thing and then he went out there. He was talking to me. I said, there's a back entrance, and I said, well, of course there is. And then he opened that door, and of course he couldn't get out that way, so then he finally found his own way out the other way.
But he did pull the phone clear off of the wall, is that right?
Oh, just what you see it. It hasn't been touched. I tried to look at his hair and everything else, and he was not dark or black, but I still say, like I said before, he's between a blonde and a brown. He's light-complected.
Did he have any scars or marks?
Golly, I don't know. He's done this as close as me and this gentleman is. I look at him, too, and all the while I'm watching that gun, too.
Did you notice what kind of pants he had on?
No, but he as near as I remember, he had a jacket on that, kind of a blazer. Like you fellows wear, but it was a kind of an army color.
Oh, you can see it was the barrel of the gun, huh?
Yeah, no fooling.
Had you ever seen this man before in the shop here, sir?
Not to my knowledge. The only thing he said to me was, he says, I'm sorry to do this, partner, but he says, this is a must.
Would you know him again if you saw him?
I kind of think I would.
Did you see what direction he went after he left the rear of the store?
I did not. I didn't have a chance. But I dashed right out of the back end and went to the next door of this Chinese restaurant and had them call the police right now.
Say, Walter, did you go next door and check upon the other witness?
Yes, Sergeant. We talked to Sam Fong. He's the owner of the Lamp of China Cafe next door.
What do you have to say?
When the victim here went into his place the phone way, Mr. Fong ran out the back in the alley and he stated he saw a car pulling away, going north through the alley.
Give you any description on it?
He states it was too dark and he couldn't see very well. He could give us no description of the car. He couldn't even give us the color.
Did he see how many people were in it?
No, he says he couldn't see. It was too dark.
He thinks there was only one.
He says he thinks there was only one in the car, though.
Just the driver, then?
Yes, just the driver.
No way of knowing if that was actually the car that the stick-up man used?
No, we couldn't positively state that, Sergeant.
How did you find out that the man was running west on Fruit Ridge?
Well, when we talked to the proprietor next door here, we understood that he was running north on out of the alley, then turned west on Fruit Ridge. But we talked to him the second time, and he says he saw the car go out of the alley on Fruit Ridge.
He didn't actually see the man on foot at all?
No, it's just a little confusing there on his part.
First report of a crime is frequently the most important one. In this case, the officers were looking for a holdup man who left the scene on foot. As it developed, however, there was a misunderstanding and the units should have been watching for an automobile. Let me emphasize also the importance of being observant. If you are ever confronted by a criminal, descriptions of appearance and mannerisms are invaluable to the police.
We have a 940 with car 9 out by the junior college. They have found a building open. I believe it's the machine shop. There's a car parked near it that they believe might be connected with the buildings being opened. We're going to meet them and check it out.
Unit 99, on that suspect in the Packard, they are now taking him to the M&L to see if they can make identification on 211.
Check it, thanks. While we were in the Detective Bureau, I received information that they had stopped a Packard somewhere in the eastern part of town, and it's believed the suspect in the 211 on Stockton Boulevard earlier this evening was driving that car. They have taken the suspect to the liquor store for identification. If he is identified, he will be brought to the police station, and we will go in there and sit in on the questioning. Unit 9 is standing by this building. The door is open. They have a man inside. Officer Taylor is approaching the car. Hi, Taylor. What do you got?
Sergeant. Well, we cruised around here, and we saw this car trying to pull out with its lights off between the two ticket offices over there, and we stopped him. We looked in the car, and he had a siphon hose and a couple of tanks, and checked around here, and there was a bar underneath the car, like a pry bar. We checked around, and we found his door open.
Had the door been pried open?
Well, it's got a lot of nicks on it. You can't tell whether it's been busted or not.
Is the lock in working order?
The lock is in working order. We had the radio contact the man who runs this thing for the college here, and he's going to come out. We found tools in the back of the car there, and we want to see if they're missing from in here.
Could they be burglar tools?
Well, they could be. There's all kinds of tools in the back of his trunk. And he's got several cans with gas cans and hoses.
Well, let us get out of the car here, and we'll go into it further. Hi, McManus. Was this the door that you found open?
Yes, sir. I walked up here, and it was slightly ajar. I pulled on it and opened, and this fellow here came over, and he said that he just ran out of gas, and he had the car pulled back there to keep it out of the way. He took his girlfriend home to 31st and 3rd Avenue and got 5 gallons of gas, and then come back out here to the college in, he said, 45 minutes.
Why did he come back to the college, did he tell you?
To put gas in the car. He said that when we pulled up, we checked on the other end of the building here, and we didn't see any lights. As we pulled around the corner, he started up in his automobile without any lights on. We asked him how come that he was driving without lights, and he said he just started the car, and he saw us, and that he didn't want to attract our attention. And that
I didn't
he,
say that.
And he started to... He waited for us, as a matter of fact, and then when we pulled up, he started driving. We had to tell him to stop.
The subject states that he ran out of gas, and there's an all-night gas station within a block from here, and he states he went all the way over to behind Carl's driving to get gas because he walked his girl home.
Is this the fellow, Taylor?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Have you questioned him at all?
We have.
What do you got to say about this fellow?
Well, I don't know. What do you mean?
You want to tell the sergeant about
it? The heart.
Well, you would... parked out here, and while you walked all the way there for gas?
I went over and picked up my girlfriend this evening after work, after I had dinner. And we were just out driving around, and I drove around here. And as I got up to the edge of the building there, well, the car started acting funny. And I just started turning around here, and it ran out of gas. So I pushed it back in there, just so it'd be all the way. And then I walked over to her place with her, lit her off. Then I walked down to, I think it's a Regal station down behind Carl's on Broadway there, and hitchhiked back from there.
Did you take the can with you when you walked your girl home?
Yeah.
You carried the can with her, with you and the girl all the way over to her house, a 5 gallon can, and then you filled it full of gas, of 5 gallons.
Yes.
Then you brought it back here, not just one, but 5 gallons.
That's right.
No, that doesn't sound like a very good story to me.
Why doesn't it?
Because it's not logical. What were you actually doing here by this building?
I wasn't by this building. I was over there, just behind where the car is parked now.
It still isn't logical.
You're close to a building. The door is found open. There's a pry bar found under your car. There's tools found in the back. Where'd the tools come from?
Those are my tools. I bought them from where I work.
What kind of tools are they?
They're proto automotive tools.
They're all automotive tools?
Yeah, they're socket wrenches, pliers, brake pliers, screwdrivers.
Here comes the man who runs.
Have you ever been in trouble?
No, I haven't.
Never been arrested?
Never.
How old are you?
19.
I see they're checking the back of the car. Did you find anything that could possibly have come from your building?
I don't know about the auto shop, but I didn't find anything from the machine shop.
Taylor, do you find any initials on any of those tools?
Just a minute, I'll check. Let's see.
Do you have any of your tools marked at all?
No, I don't.
Mechanics, as a general rule, mark their tools, don't they?
Well, I'm not really a mechanic. I just do my own work.
What are you going to do with this fellow now?
Well, we'll wait till the instructor of the automotive shop. He knows what all the equipment is in here. And we'll have him check out the equipment in the car there and see if any of it matches here. If not, we'll have to let him go because... Got nothing to hold them on.
There's a form you fill out in a case like this, isn't there?
Oh, we got the interrogation card I fill on them, and before we fill that one out, in case we are doing a...
What's the purpose of that?
Well, this is in case we ever this fellow ever turns up in a situation similar or anything like this. We'll have his name and known what he was doing in here before, and...
That card is also run through B of I, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's checked against his record. If he has a record, then they'll find it there.
Okay. I'm sure you will agree that there was some basis for the officer's belief that this man had stolen gasoline from another car. His account of his actions was not logical, but there was nothing to indicate that the machine shop had been entered and the suspect was released.
Unit 99.
99, go ahead.
924, second floor, 99.
Second floor, roger.
Check 99, came in 907.
That could be that 211 suspect you picked up, Dan.
Yeah, it could be. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hello, Oaks and Fox. I just got a 924 to come up here. What do you have?
Oh, we got these two boys they picked up out in front of that M&M liquor store shortly after the L&M liquor store had been held up. So we're going to have a little chat with them. Want to talk to you a little bit about your actions the other night out there. We had a stick-up at the M&L liquor store. And a guy out there kind of thinks you're one of the guys that's involved in it. Maybe not so much you as your partner, but he thinks you were the man who was driving the car. What do you got to say about it?
I didn't have anything to do with it. I wasn't ever near the joint.
Can you give us a little account of your time prior to that robbery?
Well, I'm down 6th Street, around a few bars down there. I met this friend of mine and borrowed his car. I had to go out and to borrow some money from another friend of mine out in the club out here.
When you left uptown, do you know what time it was?
Well, I say it was about 10 or 10:30 around there.
About 10 or 10:30 when you left uptown?
Positively, no. I was around drinking, you know. I don't remember exactly.
Where did you go then after you left uptown?
I went down J Street, stopped in one liquor store, got a couple of cans of beer. I don't remember which one it was. Then we went out and finally wound up going down Stockton Boulevard and stopped at this one, the M&M there, and got two more cans of beer.
Well, how come that you denied being out the M&M?
Oh, when these all the policemen drove up and pulled us over to the curb and jumped out and started talking about the liquor store, something being robbed out there, naturally I ain't going to admit I wasn't there in any liquor stores.
Yeah, but that wasn't a liquor store that was held up. This was another liquor store.
About it. They didn't tell me where it was at.
They asked you if you were out in front of the M&M liquor store, and you
yeah.
You said no. You couldn't have been there.
Well, that's what I said. I wasn't going to admit nothing right then.
The clerk out the store got the license number of the car. That's why you were picked up.
I didn't know anything about that. The M&L was the one that you started talking about later, wasn't it?
The M&L is the one that was held up, but the M&M is the one where you were parked in front of the store out there.
Jimmy went in, got a couple of cans of beer, and come back out.
How long have we known this friend of yours that was with you?
Came up at a joint.
You know him in the penitentiary?
Sure, I knew him up there.
Folsom?
Yeah, Folsom.
Whose car was it you were in out there?
Oh, just a friend of mine.
Friend of yours?
That's right.
How long had you had the car prior to being arrested?
Part of that day before I borrowed it from him, and then this afternoon I borrowed it again.
You borrow it quite often, do you?
No, the guy just got out of jail a while back. I got it out of giving the money to get it out of the parking lot with.
Where'd you meet him at?
Oh, right here in the jail.
In the jail?
Yeah.
Were you in jail here before?
Yeah, he was doing how long ago was it? 10 days, 15 days ago.
What were you in for?
For a bag.
What else?
Suspicion of burglary or possession of burglary tools.
Possession of burglary tools, huh?
Have you ever been arrested and convicted on burglary?
Twice.
Twice? You've been to the penitentiary two times?
Two running concurrently.
You know where the M&L liquor is?
Sure, they took me over there afterwards and let the guy that owns the store looked at me and he says that I never saw him before. That's not one of them.
That's what he said to you?
He said that to me, yeah. When he's in there by myself.
What did he say to your partner?
Give him a pass, too. Jimmy, come out, he says, give me a pass.
That made you feel pretty secure then, huh?
Made me feel a little better. Been out there, riding us around and telling us all about it, but I knew I hadn't done nothing.
So. Why were you out in that particular area?
I went out over to the club with this friend of mine.
You do?
Borrow some money from him.
You do most of your drinking in the lower end of town, isn't that correct?
No, I drink out this club sometimes. There's two of them out there. I know bartenders in both of them. I know the owners of them. I've been out there quite a few times before.
But you don't make it a habit.
I'm not out there tonight, no. Maybe once or twice a week. But
every time this guy gets off of 6th Street, he ends up in jail.
Yeah, that's right.
Every time he leaves the 6th Street, Don and I get him to talk to him.
Next time I get off of 6th Street, I'm going to be clear out of town and gone. Believe me.
You deny emphatically, however, that you're implicated in any type of a stick-up of any kind.
That's never been my racket. I never pulled a heist in my life. I ain't never going to.
But you got a heist man working with you.
Jimmy didn't do it. I'll tell you, when he went in there, he come out, and the man looked at him and said, he give him a pass. Twice.
Well, he's a heist man, nevertheless.
His house, even. The guy looked at us both out there, and he says, that's not the guy's. I haven't seen him before.
Are you working now?
Not right now. I'm in jail. Right now.
Have you worked since you got out of jail last time that we talked to you?
No, I haven't. I've been trying to get a job all over town, and nobody will give me a job tenant bar because they figure I got to put too much heat on the joint.
What happened? What was your disposition on the last time you were in?
This last time I'm out on bail now.
You're still out on bail pending disposition of the...
All the charges were dropped at bag. I'm out on bail on the bag charge.
What kind of record does this fella have? Oh, he's got quite a record. He's, we had him here a few years back for burglary, for breaking into hardware stores and drug stores. A lot of other types of stores.
How much time have you spent in the penitentiary?
Let's see, 4.5, about 7.5 years.
7.5 years, and you're how old now?
41.
41 years old, and you put in 7.5 years.
Out of the last 10, I guess.
Out of the last 10?
About 7.5.
Are you on parole now?
No, I'm not on parole.
When were you discharged from prison?
Last summer, last August.
Last August, huh? Now, on this robbery of the liquor store out there, the clerk out there, he feels sure that your partner's fellow was in there that held him up.
He didn't act like I was out there.
Well, I know. You know, at the time a crime happens, why people are a little bit excited. When you go in there and stick a gun in a man's face, he's going to get excited.
Well, I understand. We didn't go anywhere near the M&L. We turned off at about 12th Avenue there and went over to Franklin.
You sure you didn't borrow some money with a gun out there at that other liquor store?
Absolutely sure I didn't.
The actions of this suspect and his associate were sufficiently suspicious to cause the clerk in another establishment to call the police. But the inability of the hold-up victim to identify either man made it impossible to charge him with armed robbery. The suspect you heard questioned was sentenced to 6 months in the county jail for vagrancy, with commitment withheld for 2 years on a floater.
This is Unit 99. These on-the-scene tape recordings were provided by the Sacramento Police Department and were made on duty by Sergeant Bruce Guthrie in Unit 99. Your host is Chief James V. Hicks of the Sacramento Police Department.
KMA 907, Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air.
Unit 99 has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's it for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed. In between now and then, you can find more from the Epic Casebook, Unit 99, past episodes of this show, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is going on the website, and you can donate through that website as well if you'd like to help support all of the shows and everything Relic Radio. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.